Episode 145 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded August 17th, 2017. Tune in! Guys, we have an episode all about cartoons.
I know. Woo-hoo! And Game of Thrones.
Woohoo!
Like that? Game of Thrones is a cartoon.
Right? Game of Thrones, the animated series.
Oh, man. Have you seen the artwork people do, like on DeviantArt?
Yeah, yeah.
To make a little like Disney version. It's adorable.
Are you saying there's some dedicated Game of Thrones fans out there?
There's one or two. One or two. Well, I need my avatar maker for Game of Thrones.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because I'm kind of addicted to these avatar makers.
Yeah, I know.
Although they don't have like their own little like cartoon form to make an avatar, but I'd still do something. Mad Men did a little stylistic
one. I remember that.
So this is what I need.
You know, we need is like a workplace comedy starring the White Walkers, like an animated workplace comedy about how they always have to march. And the guys, the
people
the giants,
are always messing with the thermostat between 32 degrees.
Yeah, and the giant's not fitting in because he just won't refuse to walk like the rest of them. Like
he always has to take the stairs because he has to fit in the elevator. Yeah.
He's gonna just pick up the slot that Powerless was in.
Yeah, yeah.
Just take over for that spot.
Hopefully, better than that.
Janice, the ice walker, she's always reaching into the ice machine with her hands rather than the scoop.
Yeah,
fucking Janice. Okay, guys. We are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And we're going to be talking about a bunch of cartoons, a bunch of animated shows. Voltron Season 3 over on Netflix is out. It's been out for a few weeks, but we're finally able to catch up on it. DuckTales just dropped its first episode. It's also available online for free, but you can also watch on Disney XD. Harmon Quest completed its first season a while back, but we thought it was about time to check in on it.
Yeah, and then it vanished.
And then it vanished from CISO. So, good luck finding it. And
I bet it's on YouTube.
It's on this new VXV network that's like showing like a group of things, like some Rooster Teeth stuff and some other like.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that a Russian site?
I think it was legit.
Isn't everything?
Yeah, everything's a Russian site.
What isn't a Russian site now?
Yeah.
We live in Russia and America now. And Game of Thrones, of course, guys. We have to talk about that. We only have two more episodes this season.
Yep.
Ugh.
And then six more episodes next season, and that's it.
So depressing.
But then the White Walker workplace comedy is going to fill in the slack.
There we go. We get to see the adventures of Janice. All right, guys. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. If you guys want to help support us, if you like what you're hearing, you can go over there and you can make a per episode pledge. Give us a dollar for any episode we release, $2, $5, $100.
That'd be great.
If you are that one crazy wealthy Scrooge McDuck benefactor.
Yeah, if you've got a vault full of gold and you want to donate to it in between swimming, you should do that.
With a vault full of Bitcoin now?
Vault full of Bitcoin.
Keeps going up.
That's
when's that bubble going to pop?
That was a Spin Doctors album, was it? A Vault Full of Bitcoin? I think that was their third album.
Yeah, third or fourth. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Spin Doctors reference. Anyway, that's patreon.com/TV Dudes. We appreciate all of the support. You can also go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. We appreciate that as well. It's great for us. Permanent record.
Permanent record.
Permanent record.
That is our network that we are happy to be a part of. This is a network that supports TV-related podcasts. So if you guys aren't getting your full fix of TV coverage with just the TV Dudes, we know several other podcasts on our network that are covering a range of things. And this month we wanted to pimp out Marvel TV Binge. These are our buddies at MarvelTVBinge.com, Mike Moody, Martin Thomas, and Nate Bliss. They're talking Defenders this, I guess, next couple weeks because it's, as of the release of this episode, I believe it's dropped on Netflix.
It's here.
Yeah, it's here.
Yeah, so we don't know what to expect.
We haven't watched it yet.
What do you guys think? You think it's going to be good? Bad?
I think it's going to be good. The preliminary reviews were good. They did the one thing I've said they needed to do on every Marvel show, which is shave 4 episodes off of it.
Yeah, that helps.
It's 8 episodes long, even though it has 4 times the main characters.
Yeah. Also,
it's a good call.
After Iron Fist, our expectations are super low.
Yeah. All Danny has to do is just not be a complete douchebag.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine we'll be talking a little bit about it in the coming weeks, but definitely check out MarvelTVBinge.com because they're going to be going in depth.
Yes.
Yes.
If you guys like us on Facebook over at Facebook.com/TV Dudes, you can ask us questions once a week. And we got a good amount of questions here. I'm not sure if we're actually going to be able to get to all of them.
Wow.
But yeah, we'll give it a shot. Our first question comes to us from Michael Gastini, who says, what did you dudes think about the recent leaks happening over at HBO? Getting hacked is one thing, but to accidentally release a Game of Thrones episode less than 2 weeks after is suspicious as hell. Could this be an odd ploy by the network to increase interest, or are they really that foolish? Furthermore, do you think it's justifiable to watch the episode? Since it was sort of HBO's fault here.
It is justifiable to watch, but if you spoil it, you're history's worst monster.
Oh, they, yeah.
Yes.
That's a high bar to clear there, yes. Randy.
I know what I'm saying.
Okay.
Do not spoil Game of Thrones for people just because you watched it early. We're not all pirates. Some of us want to watch it on Sunday.
I just like wearing an eye patch.
That's a different thing.
Not a real pirate.
And I don't judge that. That's cool.
Yeah. It's absolutely justifiable to watch the episode. I mean, that's HBO's fault. To me, the only reason to not watch it is because I don't like to spoiler shit for myself.
Yeah.
So I would skip watching it. But I don't think HBO is in a position of needing to gin up interest in Game of Thrones.
This little small indie hit. That
yeah, I think people enough people are watching it. Like I feel like I'm pretty alone on not watching Game of Thrones right now.
If they wanted to gin up interest, The Leftovers, you could have done something.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. So leaking that Game of Thrones episode didn't get me to watch it. So yeah, there wouldn't be a point.
I think that sounds like conspiracy craziness.
Yeah. So I think they really are just that inept, like embarrassingly inept at running their computer systems.
Yeah.
Or it's all, they all run on Russian systems like the rest of us.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Alejandro Rezabata says, I am currently halfway through Westworld, and I want to know if you guys were to write a narrative for the inhabitants, what misadventures would you get your guests into with them?
There'd just be a lot of cowboys talking about terriers.
Yeah?
A lot of cowboys like, hey there, partner, you ever heard of terriers?
Let me take you in the way back machine.
Yep, and then
this failed TV show.
And then Westworld, they would just turn into them watching terriers.
Man, you're able to like always reference terriers in these questions somehow. Make some weird loophole.
The amount of time that I'd spend just sitting in the saloon and drinking, listening to Swear Engine, like I would just make them make Deadwood, and then I would do nothing. I would just sit there and watch Deadwood from inside it.
Oh man.
If we could live inside of another TV show within Westworld?
Yes. Oh yeah, there'd be a whole corner of Westworld that I would just have look like some kind of mashup between, like, you'd have Doc Holliday from Tombstone wander through and Swearengine.
Westception. Yes. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Ross Brown says, I loved Danny Trejo as Jaguar in the Pickle Rick episode of Rick and Morty. What are some of your favorite guest appearances in animated shows?
This is a tough question to remember. Like, there's a lot of guest voices in animated shows,
and they're animated.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like, you know, you can see someone's face and like, right. Oh, you really remember them from an episode.
Yeah.
But it's trickier when they're also a cartoon character.
And I feel like a lot of times the guest on an animated show becomes the featured, like the A plot of that week, and so. Like a lot of the Simpsons have had a lot of guests, yeah. Like celebrity guest voices, but most of those are kind of forgettable Simpsons episodes. Like they're not the Simpsons episodes that really stick with me.
Yeah.
My exception, I think, would be The Who. There's one where Homer has The Who play a concert on the wall between Springfield, but for the entire episode, like The Who have this like magic bond. So that every once in a while they just repeat stuff like magic bond. Like all turned together, Who Huddle? And, like it's just this running gag that makes no sense. It was definitely one of those weird, surreal gap years of The Simpsons of like these aren't quite jokes. It's just weird.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, the Who Huddle was a highlight of that season.
Was that episode called Homer Hears a Who? Because if not, they fucked up.
Oh God, I hope it was.
Oh wow,
right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
The one this is less a guest at this point. I don't know if he's a regular, but Aziz Ansari on Bob's Burgers is really good. He plays like one of their sort of annoying friends, and he's great in that role. But it's more of a recurring than a guest, I guess.
Yeah, nothing is particularly coming to mind for me.
Yeah.
For, like, animated shows.
Well, I mean, like, Nathan Fillion was great in Rick and Morty.
Oh, yeah.
But that was recent. That's why I remember it.
I remember a guest spot that Donald Glover did as, like, the male version of Marceline on Adventure Time that I liked.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good one, I guess. He had to play kind of this douchier version of her. let's see. Next question comes to us from Nick Thies. Hey, by the way, Nick, I don't need to tell Nick, but I'm going to tell our audience. I was on the UGO podcast that he does just the other day. Actually, I'm not sure if it's the UGO podcast directly or if they do a little spinoff series, but it sounds like it was a spinoff series where it's called Netflix and Kill. I'm getting it wrong.
Netflix and Kill.
Yeah. Netflix and Kill.
Yeah.
And I did a little guest spot on that where we didn't talk about a Netflix movie, which I guess is their general their general milieu, but we talked about Ozark.
Ah.
So that was a lot of fun, and you guys should go check that out. Anyway, his question is, do you guys get the feeling that Prince Lotor would do very well for himself in Game of Thrones? Also, is it just me, or is Keith not as interesting as the show seems to think he is?
I love this question because Grant's not caught up on Voltron.
So I was just thinking, these are Voltron questions.
And, and Les is not caught up on Game of Thrones.
No.
So
but as I understand it, I don't think Lotor has a sibling.
So, yeah, that's true.
So that's a strike against you in Game of Thrones.
True.
I don't think you're going to go very far if you don't have a sibling or a familial love relationship.
But I do get where he's coming from. I think Lotor, he is like the manipulative bad guy who you really – this season especially, that isn't really good stuff, making us sort of enjoy his him working against the good guys. As for Keith – this may be telling. Which one's Keith?
The red one.
Okay, so not the smart ass.
No, he's the black lion now. Like, he took over the
– Okay, yeah. You know, both Keith and the guy who was driving the black lion before.
Shiro.
Shiro. They're Cyclops. They're the boring guys. It's a really hard role to be the leader.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're watching the boring guy train the or mentor the other boring guy.
Yeah, that's rough on them. So,
the straight man, yeah.
Yeah.
Not as much fun. Alec Miracle asks, what did you guys think of the show House? It ended back in 2012, and I have to say, the last two seasons were a bit lower in quality, but overall I loved it a lot. And when it got sad with dying patients, it was depressing. Besides, Gregory House is just so charismatic and likable. Seasons 4 through 6 were the series' peak seasons. Just perfect.
I've never seen a minute of House.
Oh, really?
Never.
Oh, I've tried to find it. There used to be an animated GIF meme that went around of every House episode ever. And it was just very generic, like, patient comes in with something that can't be diagnosed. House sees, like, ignores patient, says something rude to family, walks out of hospital, watches random thing, realizes what's wrong with person. To prove it, puts them through a medical procedure that risks their life. But if it works, they'll know what they're treating. Every episode. It's like unethical things that would lose your fucking license. Yeah. And yeah,
the formula on that show, it worked. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's infinitely watchable. It's like a Behind the Music. It's like in the middle of it, you know, someone's going to sign a bad contract and this is going to go wrong. And yeah, every House episode, it's like, oh, this is just going to go so. Except for when he got all of the friggin' interns. I know that brought Olivia Wilde onto the show and a bunch of other people, but there was like the lottery year of him winnowing down to – I hated that. That felt like one of the most transparent, like, how many Cousin Olivers can we bring onto one show in one time?
It kind of did, but at the same time, initially, I was like really into it. And then it just kind of kept going and – he was just such a dick about everything, and that's his thing.
Guys, but. I'm gonna pitch a Cousin Oliver for the White Walker workplace comedy.
Okay,
I think an undead Cousin Oliver is a thing we really should use.
Yeah,
like just a little kid who comes in. You're like, where's this guy been? He's like, oh, we picked him up at Hard Home. He's a young walker. He's just adorable. Even when he's chewing your face off, I think it could really work.
I'm precocious.
Yes, a precocious White Walker.
Okay. The show's getting better and
it's
better.
Really developing.
Yeah. We're 6 seasons in a movie, right? Charles Armstrong says, is the Avatar Korra Voltron team forever cursed by the fact that all of their shows take 1 or 2 seasons before becoming great? Also, are you more willing to give animated shows a couple of seasons to work out the kinks than live action?
I reject your premise, sir.
Yeah, all of that's wrong. Voltron was great in season one. I haven't watched Korra or Avatar.
Avatar really? Was amazing yeah. wow. right out the gate.
Avatar was great right out the gate, and Korra had a better first season than any. I think the first season is the strongest season, actually.
If anything, the first half of season three of Voltron was dark and down, and they couldn't form Voltron, and they could all these things. Like, I almost gave up on it partway through season three of Voltron.
Wow, okay.
And then it upswings so well.
Yeah.
But I would also say that I am less likely to give an anime show a chance. We're good if I make it through the pilot. That thing better rock.
Yeah, that's agreed. I'm the same. The only thing is that I will go back to animated shows in a way that I wouldn't with live action. If I hear like a bunch of my friends are enjoying it, I might go back and give a show a chance that I'd given up on, because I don't feel like with animated shows I have to go back and watch it from the beginning and just pick up wherever.
Yeah. Jonathan Haptemichael says, "Hi, dudes. I have been getting tired of the 80s and 90s show revival announcements, as most of them seem to be done for the sake of nostalgia. For every Voltron, there are five Fuller Houses. What series of yesteryear do you want revived or rebooted, and what would you change to make the series more relevant than just nostalgia?"
I think
I don't know if that's how you meant it, but I'm going to say it that way.
I think it's all in caps. I think you meant nostalgia!
Nostalgia!
I think
nostalgia.
I think it's time for Manimal to come back and fight Nazis.
Manimal.
Yeah. You could do that.
That's a joke. I have no idea. I have no idea what I want back. I like what's relevant right now. Like, actually, an A-Team, if you did the A-Team as a sort of disgraced because they went up against like private military, and you did a sort of a like Patriots trying to expose the bad shit that this mercenary company was doing overseas, that something like that, as opposed to like the shot of the week of them, you know, helping out people, which you could still do. But if the overall arc was basically them trying to prove that they were framed by this Blackwater type outfit because they were noble soldiers, and the Blackwater guys, they were just getting in their way. You could do something like that. I think that'd be an interesting through line for an A-Team reboot.
Why don't I have Quantum Leap still on my television? Like, that's right good. Now, that's that show just exists. They could just remake that thing.
Yeah.
Like, it could even be Sam Beckett. Like, you could get
Scott Bakula. Could totally do that.
They should just bring that back and make the they don't have to be quite as early 90s or late 80s hokey as the original. Baldessari, was that the producer of it? David Baldessari?
Who would you want to run a new Quantum Leap? Who do you think? I mean, other than Brian Fuller, obviously.
I want Brian Fuller for everything.
Yeah.
Ronald D. Moore.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be okay with that.
Ronald D. Moore doing Quantum Leap, I'd be all about that.
Who just left Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah.
Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat.
Yeah.
Either one of them I'd be all right with. I'm all right with timey-wimey love conquers everything when it comes to Quantum Leap.
Yeah, I like this idea.
You guys know this show Murder, She Wrote?
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I want an old Jessica Fletcher that is going around, and she's just constantly surrounded by murder, not because it's coincidence, but because she's a serial killer.
Oh, so Dexter meets Murder, She Wrote?
Yes.
Can Margot Martindale play the lead?
Yes. Hell yeah, she can.
Yes.
Her going around and killing people and framing other people.
Oh, I'll watch the living shit out of that. Clearly
they did it. Yeah. Like, Jessica Fletcher, you did it again. Just because why was she around so many murders? Yeah. Statistically, you know she was a murderer.
Margot Martindale, serial murderer and author. Well, I'm on board that.
And that'd be a great twist on the solving murders, because like every episode, it wouldn't just be solving it. Like, it wouldn't
She's getting away with it.
It would be completely perfectly framing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a little conflicted on if I want this be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek comedy, because it's sort of cheeky, the fact that she would be like setting people up.
Yeah.
Like John Waters' serial mom or something.
Yeah, like, I like
this,
it.
This could be really mad.
And everyone's like, great job, Jessica.
Yeah.
So, caught another one. Okay, last question, guys.
Watch that show, damn it.
Yep.
Paul Mampilli says, if you had the genius of Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty and had to turn yourself into a fruit or vegetable, this is in reference to him turning himself into a pickle Rick. Which one would you be, and what kind of adventures would you have? Wow. So here we get to have some whole VeggieTales kind of thing. What sort of fruit or vegetable do we want to be, guys?
Well, Nick Thigh suggests Rutabaga Randy! And I can't beat that. I don't even know what rutabaga tastes or looks like, but Rutabaga Randy sounds – I'm with it.
That's pretty good.
What kind of adventures would I have? I would team up with the squash that was an ex-con, and we would solve mysteries in Ocean Beach, California.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like something. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know.
I would be a beet. They seem pretty indestructible, like kind of low to the ground. And I would
beets by less?
Yes. And I would just roll around the south. I'd just walk the earth like Kane from Kung Fu.
Nice. I would be a potato, guys.
Yeah?
Not just any potato. A couch potato.
Oh.
I would sit around as a potato and watch TV. That's pretty much what I do anyway.
So you're off to a good start?
So, last week, we talked a little bit about Netflix's woes and that, you know, the over-leveraged money and that Disney was pulling all their stuff out and that kind of thing.
Their woes and their woes.
Yes.
Yeah, I just kept imagining, whoa, from Joey Lawrence.
Whoa.
Well, this week, they announced a renewal of Ozark for season 2.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And Glow for season 2, which we knew was coming, which is good. They also nabbed Shonda Rhimes is moving to Shondaland over to Netflix. She's going to make all her new shows through Netflix.
Damn.
Yeah.
It seems like they were ready for the Disney walk.
Yeah. In fact, it's almost like Disney was like, we're leaving. And they're like, it's like they pulled out their other hot wives.
Right.
Like, and not just one. They're like, there's like 10. And they're like, they're all in Corvettes. And it's like, yeah, you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See ya. Best of luck.
Yeah. Best of luck.
Setting up our infrastructure.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Netflix is going to be okay, guys. They're going to be all right. Yeah. Shondaland. It's interesting in the statement. Shonda Rhimes was very sort of conciliatory toward ABC. She did say, like, you know, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, continue on ABC. And she said, basically, I couldn't have asked for a better home to begin my career. I continue to be grateful to so many talented people. But today we are thrilled to begin creating new Shondaland stories with Netflix. We're excited to expand both our audience and our creative identity with Ted and the entire team at Netflix. Ted is Ted Sarandos, who is the head of Netflix. So, yeah, the deal, according to the Wall Street Journal, will net her $10 million a year. So that would take a bite out of their money problems there, paying her $10 million a year. But I think that's probably going to pay off for them.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so also I heard rumors that they have like 60 new shows coming out this year. So
all by Shonda Rhimes?
All by Shonda Rhimes. Yes. Probably that's true, actually. How to Get Away with Shoplifting. How to Get Away with Jaywalking.
How to Get Away with Interpretive Dance.
how to get away with being a white supremacist. It turns out you just get elected president.
Oh,
for more on that, stick around for the Patreon.
Oh, shit. Is that what we're talking about?
On the lighter side of the news, though, you guys remember Sense8?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So Netflix offered they're going to do a 2-hour movie to sort of wrap everything up,
which was very
nice of them. But there's a better offer on the table. That offer comes from X Hamster, the porn site that has offered to make a full season 3 of Sense8.
I don't know what's weirder, the whole story in general or the fact that when I read the headline that porn site wants to offer Wachowski's money, I really just assumed it would be Pornhub. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe that if there is a porn website I think is about to make decent original content, I had a different one in mind.
Yeah, yeah.
That's super fucking weird.
Well, Pornhub already has their educational agenda, so we live in a fucked up world.
I think Pornhub's the one that always embarrasses red states by dropping
stats.
Yeah, stats and search terms and stuff.
Do they have strings attached? Maybe strings with like balls intermittently on them?
Here's what they say. Currently, one of the most trafficked websites on the internet. True. We get more visitors daily than the New York Times, ESPN, or the Daily Mail. I wouldn't be surprised if that's combined.
I bet that's combined.
In short, we have the eyeballs and the revenue. Unlike with Netflix, you wouldn't be competing for part of our production budget. It would be yours.
Dang.
We also have the disposition. We know that a series about polymorphous perversity is a hard sell for a mainstream network like Netflix. We have no such limitations and also understand implicitly the interconnectedness of sexualities across borders. In short, we are a we. X-Hamster has a long history of fighting for the rights of sexual speech and non-normative sexuality. In addition to allowing billions of users to connect with individual articulations of gender and sexuality, oh, is that what that is? We continue to use our audience to speak up against repressive anti-LGBTQ laws in the U.S. and abroad, and for sex ed in public schools, Planned Parenthood, and the rights of sex. Fuck, I want X-Hamster to run for president.
I kind
of
do, and I'm remembering that exact phrasing for every time I ever have to defend porn to anyone ever. That is definitely how you rationalize that shit.
Wow. Like, what a,
I kinda
what a
want
powerful
him to put
the, sale.
Yeah, I really want him to put the money up.
So, this is not a joke.
Yeah.
Vice President Alex Hawkins reached back out to Screen Crush and said, yeah, we're huge admirers of the show. We know that there's logistics to be worked out. This is about switching the way the show's delivered. Basically, they think the show takes risks. We're a nascent network. I'd love to hear what they would do with us. Fuck, that's crazy. I mean, there's no way this could work, right? I'm surely Netflix has some control over the content. But the notion that, like, Pornhub is going to be producing a revival.
X-Hamster.
No. You know they're all going to get in the game.
Yeah.
Like 3 years from now, we're all going to have subscriptions to 3 different porn sites so we can watch whatever the new Mitch Hurwitz show is.
Yeah. It's like, it's going to be the new Read It for the Articles. Like, I just have an X-Hamster membership for Sense8.
Only then will I have to have that membership. Yeah, then.
Yeah.
Okay, let's also take a moment to recognize that in 2017, Netflix is a mainstream network.
I noticed that too. Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
It's kind of crazy. All right. Well, not to be outdone, Amazon has some news and some stuff shaking right now. Amazon is still working on their Galaxy Quest TV series, and they have landed Paul Scheer of The League to write a script for the reboot, taking over from the original film writer.
This makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Paul Scheer is amazing.
He's great. He's done so many bit parts in movies, but it's like for years you'd see like David Cross or somebody in a bit role in a movie and have no idea how funny that guy is. And I feel that way about Paul Scheer. Like, the more I've seen of him on his own, the funnier and funnier that guy gets.
So who do you cast on a TV Galaxy Quest, is my question. Do you have any notions? Like, let me make it easier for you. Who do you cast from The League in a Galaxy Quest series? If you have to use only the people who are on The League.
Can we have Jason Mantzoukas play everyone?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, a one-man production, no sets.
I want
he plays everyone.
To take Rickman's part.
Yeah. I was thinking Kevin could play the lead. He could play what's the captain's name?
Tim Allen.
Tim Allen's role, yep.
Yeah.
Taco could definitely be
He could be
Tony Shalhoub's part.
Yeah, Shalhoub's part.
Yeah, because Shalhoub's stoned through all of Galaxy Quest. Like, he's the only one rolling with all of it, and he's hungry the whole time.
And of course, Kate Eastleston could be Sigourney Weaver's part.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm on board with this all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I was making a dumb joke, but now I kind of want to see it.
Yeah, and Mark Duplass would be there somewhere, and he just should be in everything.
Mark Duplass, yeah. maybe he's the red shirt.
Oh, he's Guy?
Yeah, he's Guy.
But like a lazier,
version, guy? Yeah.
Just an endless string of clones of him.
Oh my God,
every episode
he does die in every episode.
Hey guys, how's things going? Being a great mission today. And all the rest of them are like, don't say anything.
What about Nick?
Kroll?
Nick Kroll.
He could be the nerdy little kid at the computer.
Oh my God.
Tommy. This is going to be a great movie. Yeah,
I think it's great. All right. Anyway, that's kind of exciting. Bigger news for them, though, is that they have landed Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett's Good Omens, which I've never read.
Yeah, I liked Good Omens. It's really fun.
This is about angels and demons and the Antichrist, right?
Basically. It's the end of the world.
End of the world, okay.
Yeah, there's been an angel and a demon on Earth forever.
Okay.
I mean, there's been a bunch of them, but these two guys have been getting along pretty fine. Each kind of doing their job and staying out of each other's ways, and there's like a professional courtesy going.
Yeah, okay.
And then the actual apocalypse starts, and both of them are like, yeah, I don't really want this to happen. Like, I don't really want this to end.
It's a funny version of the apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, you have pestilence and war, and, like, the horsemen are great.
So they're, like, teaming up to try and stop the apocalypse?
Basically.
Oh, sweet. So, okay.
It's like trying to bureaucratically fuck up the apocalypse from happening.
So the angel is going to be played by Michael Sheen, and the demon is going to be played by David Tennant.
Perfect.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's great. It's been years since – I'm going to have to reread this. It's been years since I've read it, but that sounds like great casting.
It's weird that it's taken Neil Gaiman this long to sort of break into TV, but now everything –
that guy's going to go places, though.
I think he's going to do all right.
I like David Tennant getting to flex the villain role a bit here.
Yeah.
Like this and Mr. Purple. Apparently, he's going to be in the next season of Jessica Jones.
It looks like
flashbacks.
Yeah, I think it's in their head. It's her and the sidekick kid from down the hall.
Okay.
But there have been a couple of scenes, but they all look like Tennant screaming at them in a crowd.
So I'm pretty sure no
one else in the crowd can see him.
Yeah. The Jetsons is getting a live-action TV series, possibly, from Robert Zemeckis.
This will be as good as the Flintstone movies.
It's going to be so goddamn weird.
We've talked about this before, but now it's like actually landed at ABC, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually getting developed. This thing is happening.
Here's the thing. This is probably not going to be great, but it's going to be weird as fuck. I don't know if you guys know about Zemeckis, but Back to the Future, if you look at it, it's great movies, but there's some weird shit in there. And if you look at his comics work and some of his other stuff, that dude has some weird ideas.
Did he do that like – nope, never mind.
He did an Ant-Man special where Ant-Man and Wasp bully a kid's parents at Christmas time.
Huh.
They, like, torment these parents because the kid wants them to. It's weird. He is a weird dude. He's probably the right guy to be running a weird ass. It says they're revolve around America's favorite future family told through a modern filter. So
I'm game.
I'm curious, yeah. And finally.
Q-Sigh.
Okay. HBO doubles down on Confederate defense after Charlottesville. I think last time we talked about this, we came down in sort of a like let them do Confederate. I think we were all sort of in a more or less a whatever, you know.
I mean, where I kind of landed was I'm uncomfortable with it, with some aspects of this, but I'm interested to see where they might be able to make something work.
That's kind of where I saw us too. And then so many of my friends and people I don't know, like Ta-Nehisi Coates, eloquently spoke to why they shouldn't do this show, and I very much came around to they probably shouldn't do the show. And then this weekend happened, and I was like, fuck, it is the wrong time for this show. And I thought maybe on Monday we'd get some kind of announcement from HBO that they were retooling or that they were just waiting for the right time to put the announcement out. But no, they are going forward with this, and they clearly do not get why everyone's so mad.
They're not taking any credit over it.
There's their piece that was in the New York Times. They say, we support everybody's right to express an opinion, but the suggestion of irresponsibility on our part is simply undeserved. HBO has a long history of championing intelligent storytelling, and we will approach the project with the same level of thoughtfulness that has always defined our programming. We recognize the sensitivity of this project and will treat it with the respect that it deserves. Our creative partners should be given time to develop the series rather than face prejudgment. It's really like the don't call me racist kind of thing. It's
everything we've done before has been good. We'll approach it. You're not approaching it with thoughtfulness because there's no way that this does not really, really offend a huge portion of the population. And I appreciate that.
It's already offended.
I appreciate not having prior restraint against speech.
Yeah, sure.
But the odds that something positive and good comes out of this are so slim. I'm not saying that these writers are great coming off of a great show.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they couldn't write a show that really made me sympathize with a pedophile. But the odds of them pulling that off are really, really slim. And the odds of them just making a TV show about pedophiles that offends the fuck out of the whole country would be really, really high. And I don't think HBO would support them making a show about pedophiles. But we're totally going to make a show about what if the slave owners won at a time when the slave owners are in the streets yelling, what if we won?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's the wrong time. And yeah, freedom of speech, that's great. All that freedom of artistic expression, that's fantastic. But you are also a commercial enterprise. And at some point you gotta look at what you're doing to your brand. And I think it's a dangerous thing for their brand. I think it's a bad idea.
I feel like a portion of the crowd that is yelling for HBO to support this show and to make sure that they go ahead and go through with it are a lot of the same people who were probably fine with Collateral Damage and other movies never coming out in theater for the year after 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, we had too soon and oh, it's going to hurt people and it'll be bad for the public discourse. Like, we've done this before, but suddenly it triggers a population
that, you know what,
we're hand-waving away.
That's a really good point. I just rewatched Big Trouble the other day, which is a funny Dave Barry novel, Elmore Leonard-esque, and it is the goofiest piece of shit. It's fun. I enjoyed it, but it's a goofy movie, and it is about a nuclear bomb being smuggled through airport security by these two knuckleheads onto a private plane. It has no bearing on 9/11, but because it was about airport security failing, they held off on this comedy and basically killed it because they were worried about the sensitivity of any kind. They changed a Friends episode where Monica and Chandler got past security. And yet we're going to run a Confederate show this recent. I mean,
well, I mean, when is this plane even coming out?
They are saying
out,
this isn't coming out until like 2018. Yeah.
But in between then, this is a whole cast and crew and great writers and great directors. They're going to pull talent from other shows. Like, these aren't hacks direct to video. Yeah. This is going to be top tier talent that could be on a bunch of other shows that are going to make what is going to, I shit you not, be a career embarrassment for nearly every single person involved in this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I do look at the pedigree of HBO's production.
Yeah.
And as well as their risk assessment in these kind of things, and think that they must have considered whether or not they feel like they have something valid and powerful, and even if it flirts with controversy, is ultimately for the good within this story that they want to tell. I mean, we look at how fucked up shows like Handmaid's Tale are, or
Man in the High Castle.
Man in the High Castle,
yeah.
And these are kind of putting out some pretty terrible, like, dystopian alternate universes.
Yeah,
but what they are able to land on as far as the message and how they frame the bad guys, whether or not there's a degree of humanity or sympathy there, I feel like they're able to kind of skirt that line and deliver something that's kind of powerful. And like, when I watch Handmaid's Tale, I feel like it's needed in a way. So I don't know necessarily how to feel about this.
Yeah. My thing is, there's two thoughts here. One is, like,
we haven't seen it.
If David Simon was doing this, first of all, he wouldn't do it. But if David Simon was doing this, I might think it was going to be handled with some nuance and add some class. I love Benioff and Weiss. I am a huge Game of Thrones fan. But if they bring the same popcorn style to this that they did to Game of Thrones,
they had some problems with tact in
exactly.
That show.
And that's the thing, is like, this could be a very much an eye popping, like, you know, popcorn show, but it's not worth doing that show if it's going to hurt people. And I don't know. I also feel like it's easy enough. I don't want anybody to get fired. I think that what they should do, they take this talented cast, the people they're putting together, you know, all that thing, and re-modify the thing so it's not Confederate. Do a different alternate history. Do some of the various things that Ta-Nehisi Coates suggested in the Atlantic piece, where he said, like, there's a ton of alternate histories you could do that don't involve what if they won the Civil War. That is such an unlikely thing anyway that it's kind of a stupid alternate history.
Yeah, ultimately what I feel is that HBO, next time you guys are going to write a little press release, maybe run it through X-Hamster first. Voltron.
Yes.
Over on Netflix, it's on its third season, and I haven't watched the second season and most of the first season. So this is on YouTube.
Wow, really? I thought you'd watch. I thought you really liked Voltron.
I was obsessed with in the 80s with the original.
Okay.
I will say that I don't really like anime, and the first season of Voltron shocked me with how much I enjoyed it. And then season two, it was still amazing, but it wore on me. I hit my upper limit on how much anime I wanted to watch in a row.
Yeah.
And then I started season three, and the storytelling on this show is better than I expected it to be. And so consequently, season three starts on a down note where the team's a little bit in disarray.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a little – I wanted ass kicking out of it, and they're off their game at the start.
Yeah, for longer than I thought. I thought that would last to the end of the first episode, and it lasts to the end of the third.
Yeah, and so I almost stopped watching season three. It took me a couple days to get through the first two episodes. Then it starts to pick back up again. They start to get the team back together. And then the last two episodes, really the last episode, reminds me of everything that was awesome in season one. I sat there with like my fist clenched on the couch, going, "This is why I'm watching Voltron. This is fucking amazing. Holy crap, that's a giant robot going to kick the shit out of that thing." Like I sat there and went, "Oh yeah, this is why giant robots are cool."
I can't believe you haven't watched Korra.
No.
Oh, you got a little treat for yourself.
I really do. I felt really bad. I got to talk to Janet Varney, and I had not watched Korra.
there was a friend of mine who was talking about this and was talking about Voltron, how much they love Voltron and how great it was. And then they started talking about how much they liked Korra and how much they liked Avatar. And I was like, you know, those are the same people, right? And this was a revelation to them. They had no idea.
That Korra and Avatar were the same thing?
No, that Korra and Avatar were the same people who made Voltron.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or a lot of the same people. And I was like, yeah, if you look at it, it makes perfect sense. The characters, the sense of humor, especially their guy that's played by the guy from Flight of the Conchords.
Rhys Darby, yeah.
Rhys Darby's, that character is right out of Avatar.
Yeah,
and he steals scenes every time he's in them.
Are they in the same universe?
Ooh.
It's possible.
So, to spoiler something from season three.
Yeah,
I think it's the second to last or final episode, they do a flashback to the origin of Voltron towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
And they go back and show the original Paladins, like the original five, and it's got this older school look a little bit, and like you're seeing...
Were they metal benders?
No, just about. And I love the whole origin of like where they got the alloy that they made Voltron out of. It explains why Voltron is almost indestructible by anything that he's ever fought.
Yep.
There's literally not anything else in the universe, in our universe, made from the shit he's made of.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like they did this great explanation. They did this great flashback story. But the origin of...
King Alphor and Zarkon.
Yeah, of Zark. When you see...
And the witch.
And the witch.
Yeah.
When you see... how the witch that's in the first season that's using the Dark Quintessence to do magic crap for Zarkon and make like infuse power into the robots.
Yeah.
Her origin and Zarkon's origin of how he became glowy eyed evil is amazing.
Yeah. It really is like watching and one of these
sad.
Like
sad.
It's really like watching one of these classic partnerships go bad. It's like if Captain America and Iron Man, well, that's a bad example, turn on each other. But if, it's like one of these things where if there was a team and there was like a couple and they're like their best friend and they were all like doing good around the galaxy. I guess if Luke, Leia, and Han, eventually if Han and Leia became evil and Luke had to fight them, that's kind of what this is.
Yeah, if Han and Leia lived on a planet that was entirely too close to doing experiments on the dark side of the Force and it corrupted them.
Yeah.
Ah.
And you just watch it get sadder and sadder until it goes off the rails.
Yeah. Do you guys watch any Adventure Time?
Yes. No.
So like the Ice King?
Yes. It's similar to that.
Where it's like this tragic tale of how he turned evil, basically giving his life to save her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very similar to that. You just feel worse and worse for and what he does after that, and he's a horrible guy and he gets shitty before he saves his wife, but he fucks everyone to do it. And himself and her. None of it works out. But
I was super happy that this was a 7-episode season. I know a lot of people were disappointed, but I could get through 7 episodes.
My only problem is that it arced up so suddenly in the last three of
it
seven for
did
me.
Did not feel like a full season.
That it felt like a half season. I would, when the trailer ran and I went, wait, so there's not another episode going to air? And
well,
and I felt like we had just hit stride.
The fourth season is being released on October 13th.
So I kind of felt like it had to be a mid-season gap.
I feel like there might have been production delays or something, and they had like, well, let's get something out there.
It felt to me like we caught half a season. Yeah.
But I was good because I needed that half season. I couldn't have gotten through more episodes at the time.
No,
I
wouldn't have enjoyed sitting through the other seven.
But I'll say this. I love that they finally put Allura in the lion.
Yes, that was great.
I liked mixing things up with who's driving what lion.
Yep. I was not as interested in the fake Shiro clone type storyline.
Yeah. What's weird is these were a lot of sort of standalone episodes, because there's one where they go to an alternate universe where the Altaians are sort of the bad guys.
Yeah, that was cool.
And that was cool, but it was like, it was a one shot. And then the story of like Shiro, that's sort of a one shot with him and a couple rebels on another planet. And then the flashback is kind of a one shot. And then there's a whole bunch of things with Lotor and his four generals, which I really like those bad guys, sort of the evil Voltron team.
Yeah.
Like, I liked all those characters. They did a great job developing them. But yeah, the arc was that first three episodes, which, like you, as you note, is kind of dark. Like, it's Lotor kicking their ass and Keith not being able to use the lion. They can't figure out how to form Voltron. Like,
yeah, they're back to being just bad at this.
Yeah. It was satisfying to get them back to it, but it was a weirdly down note. I really enjoyed the season, but it did feel a little disjointed.
So, yeah, I didn't catch this show, but I did catch DuckTales.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, it's another show that is a reboot or a revitalization. No, this is a reboot.
This is definitely a reboot.
God, it's done so well.
The original from the 80s. And, dude, it looks gorgeous.
It looks amazing. I mean, I watched it on YouTube, plugged into my TV, and cranked the resolution and then let it load. And it looks beautiful. I mean, it looks like the old Carl Banks that...
Man.
I mean, like, it has like, that old comic.
The half-tone print kind of thing.
Yes, all the half-tone backgrounds.
The animation is stunning. Now, here's a question for you guys. Grant, I know you were a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Les, were you a fan of DuckTales back in the day? I've never seen an episode.
Really?
Never saw it.
I watched a lot of DuckTales.
Never seen DuckTales. So I came at this from a point of view of great voice cast, memorable theme song. I like the Duck comics, whatever, out of them, Carl Barks and... But Carl Barks and who's the other guy? Because there's someone, Don Rosa. Mm-hmm. Carl Barks and Don Rosa have done some really interesting thing with Uncle Scrooge. And I fucking loved this. This was really good.
Who's the evil triplet, Louis?
Yeah, that was great. The triplets are great. The addition, whenever you introduce Webby Vanderquack, the new girl was in the team, whenever you're trying to balance a show and add, say, a show that was all guys, when you're trying to add a girl character in, there's always the worry that it's going to be like the girl's too good at everything. And they do. She's like – she's the martial artist and she's smart and that kind of thing. But I loved the character. I never felt like they were giving her like the Wesley Crusher treatment.
Yeah. She's near useless in real life.
Yeah.
Like in reality, like, I'm going to get a hamburger. Like, we can bring you a hamburger.
I was really taken with how it kind of unfolds the story, does this little origin – includes Donald Duck, which is a little bit surprising.
Yeah, very heavily includes Donald Duck, yeah.
He's also inadvertently working for the villain, kind of.
Yeah. I wasn't really as familiar with like how the family tree kind of lined up, and I like that they explained it a little more.
Yeah.
He's actually their great uncle.
Yeah.
And I thought before it was just another uncle, like how they're like Donald and him were siblings or whatever. But I didn't really like the voices of Huey and Dewey and Louie all that much, only in that they don't sound distinguished from each other.
That's fair. Absolutely
I have a hard
fair.
Time telling them apart from one another.
And like I had to keep looking at my IMDb and then looking at them, trying to figure out the shirts and how the shirts corresponded to what names, because they don't say it often enough. I'm like, and then like I can't tell Danny Pudi's voice from Bobby Moynihan, and I'm like, what's up with that? Like,
Ben Schwartz jumped out every once in a while at me, but yeah, I had a hard time.
I feel like part of the joke that may be part of the joke. Because Uncle Scrooge can't tell them apart either. And I do think as they go on, we're going to learn a little more as like which one is which. And like I said, I don't remember which one is which either. But the one that sort of was the Uncle Scrooge is my best pal, I'm the heir to his empire, that character stood out, even if I couldn't tell you which character the name was.
Dewey with the blue shirt who followed him around.
Does
and
the laser jump. And
that was Ben Schwartz. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Bobby Moynihan's the bad boy, Louie in the green. And Danny Pudi's the red shirt. And they all sound too similar. And I'm like,
you
cast three guys who know how to have vocal range here.
Yeah.
So that was a little confusing for me. I love Launchpad McQuack.
Oh,
I've never heard of that guy before. I didn't recognize the actor's name.
He's on SNL.
Oh, okay. Man, because he's perfect.
Yeah.
He sounds so much like the old
I'm a pilot.
Yeah, he's doing something. It feels a little bit like a nod to what's his name,
Patrick Warburton.
Warburton.
Yeah, I kept expecting like it. Well, here's the other thing. I don't know how much you guys know about Skylanders, kids' video game. Grant,
I've seen a little bit of it.
You'll learn, probably. That time is coming, Grant.
Okay.
But Skylanders has this character voiced by Patrick Warburton, who is their pilot, and he's very much the Patrick Warburton character. And I kept expecting Warburton's voice to come out of Launchpad McQuack because of that.
Yeah, it's inescapable.
And this guy sounds a lot like the classic Launchpad from the original series to me.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he did a great job.
He's
I love
California Stoner.
Yes.
It's perfect.
And I loved his, yes, sir, little kid I just met.
Like, yeah, his vivid enthusiasm and clear unqualification for the job is great. Yeah.
I'm really excited to see Fenton Crackshell, a.k.a. Gizmo Duck, show up with Lin-Manuel Miranda, eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was a really fun episode. It flowed nicely from the intro sequence into – it was basically like two episodes.
Yeah, it was like a two-episode pilot. But I loved the long wait before they ran the title and the song and everything. Like,
yeah,
that was right at the end of the first in between. Yeah,
I was amazed that the DuckTales pilot is one of the better structured pilot episodes I've seen in a while. Like,
right?
I've seen legit shows with huge budgets that did not set their story up this well.
It was a 40-minute pilot, which is a lot for an animated show.
For a kids' cartoon, yeah.
And yeah, they saved the animation or the theme song and the setup for the middle. It's really good.
Yeah. So let's move on to Harmon Quest. And this one, Randy, you saw a bit of this a while ago. I just recently binged through the first season.
I watched the whole first season, but I couldn't tell you what happens in it other than they play D&D.
It dropped off a CISO, and CISO's about to drop off the face of the earth, so I missed Harmon Quest.
Yeah, CISO's going. I watched this on some other network that seems to be a collection of a bunch of different streaming shows. But Harmon Quest, for anyone who's unfamiliar with it, is Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, who also is a co-creator of Rick and Morty. He's a larger-than-life television showrunner personality.
Yep.
And he has found a pretty remarkable, albeit weird, DM, Dungeon Master.
You know the story of this, right?
I watched Harmontown, yeah.
They had a podcast, and with his buddy Jeff Davis and his girlfriend, wife, now ex-wife, Aaron McGarthy. What's that?
The guy that draws Garfield?
No, that's Jim Davis.
Jim Davis.
This guy fought in the Civil War.
Okay.
actually, he had a great bit about that. He goes to the South and people love him because his name is Jeff Davis and he's always embarrassed by it. Anyway, Jeff Davis is like the happy version of Dan Harmon. And Aaron McGarthy was his girlfriend, was his wife, is now his ex-wife, but they all still get along. And
is that who's the other girl?
Yeah, that's the girl.
Oh.
That's his ex-wife.
Oh.
They were doing this podcast, Harmontown, and it was in the back of the comic store in California, The Meltdown. And they were like, one night they're like, hey, who's got a D20 in their pocket? We want to play D&D. This guy, Spencer Crittenden, who looks like what you would think a D&D Dungeon Master looks like.
Long ponytail in the back and a giant ZZ Top beard.
Yep, yep.
Glasses, yeah.
He was on an episode of Community. He played Annie's brother.
Yeah.
But he had a D20 in his pocket, just carried it around, got up, and basically started running D&D for these people. I've run D&D a lot.
I want to take a moment. During our iZombie discussion on their D&D episode, mm-hmm. I think we all agreed that having played Dungeons & Dragons for huge parts of our lives, none of us had ever carried around die and rolled for shit just randomly.
Spencer might. Yeah. But he is – there's a special quality to being a DM for these guys. These guys fuck around. They don't really understand the rules. They're gonna make jokes. I've tried doing that kind of thing. I had a show on oneofus.net, and it got really frustrating for me because I put so much effort into it, and it wound up being just a bunch of dumb jokes.
Yeah.
And so
– he's able to just kind of run with it.
He just runs with it, and you can never tell – like, I'm a DM. I know when someone's improvising. And I'm never sure when he is like making something up or if this was part of his plans. He is really great at going along with stuff.
Sometimes it feels like he's in on the joke ahead of time. Like, okay, so we see this campaign unfold through 10 episodes. So each little segment of story is taking place over 30 minutes, and each one brings in a guest celebrity, a friend of Dan Harmon's. That's a guest celebrity. That's going to be a character for that portion of the story.
Yeah. The guests, by the way, Kumail Nanjiani, Janet Varney, Jason Mantzoukas, Gillian Jacobs,
not
Roy Scarble.
No.
These are people who are going to be in the second season.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah. Okay.
Which is going to be on VRV Select.
Because the first season, it was Paul F. Tompkins, Aubrey Plaza.
Aubrey Plaza is amazing.
Aubrey Plaza is great because you can't tell whether she wants to be there or not.
And she's
every
just
show.
She's extreme wild card with everything.
Ron Funches.
Oh, I like Ron Funches.
But the conceit of this, what I love is that he works them in as an NPC who is going to either betray them or die by the end of the episode.
Yeah. So, you know, part of this is improv.
Yeah.
And you can tell the aspects that are, I guess. Mm-hmm. But some of it that should be improv, it feels like at least Dan Harmon and Jeff Davis were given notes on what's going to happen. So they kind of know what they should do eventually before, like, they'll fuck around before they have to kind of do.
I think that's probably true.
It feels scripted to a certain extent. There's this one particular sequence in about the middle.
Yeah.
Where they're on a train track, a la Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're riding in this train car, and this other one's going alongside them with ghosts. And Jeff Davis just wraps a rope around a battle axe and throws it onto the track instead of at these guys so that it stops them and they fly forward and like they're able to like keep rolling on. That felt like such a I know what I need to do in this scenario in order to keep us moving, like that was scripted ahead of time.
Oh, I don't know. That actually rings true to a lot of D&D I've played.
Maybe.
The players will always do things you don't expect them to do, and it's like, well, that was going to be an encounter, and I guess it's over now.
There were other parts where, like, obviously they have to wrap up and kill the guest who's on, and it feels like, oh, well, I'm going to have to do this move because that's part of the script of me dying versus, like, where we're just kind of organically fucking around.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the addition – I always liked listening to the play D&D. It was always kind of funny. And at the same time that it was making fun of it, they were legitimately – like, they enjoyed playing it. Like, Spencer's a storyteller. His story gets kind of ridiculous. But his basic idea of, like, this – they accidentally unleashed a demon cult and they keep finding these people and they don't know what they're – it's a good storytelling. It's a good campaign, but adding the animation really adds something to it.
It's great. Yeah. The animation is fun, and it's able to add a lot of an extra layer of humor to what's already going on there.
The biggest thing, Jeff Davis is not a goblin. Jeff Davis is a very tall man.
Yeah.
But he plays this little goblin, and every time you see him, you understand why Jeff's playing him like this little tiny dude.
Yeah. There's this part where Aubrey Plaza, just like for no reason except for that she seemed annoyed at Jeff Davis, uses a magic spell to shrink him to like a sixth of his size.
And he was already stayed that way,
And then he's like stuck that way until the next episode. And like they actually have a part where they just stop the whole playing of the game and they start having an argument between them.
Yes.
Like, why would you do that? Don't actually do that. Is she really going to do that? And Spencer rolls and like, apparently, she does. She just shrunk you. So those parts, I couldn't really tell where the reality is, where the improv is, where's the scripted part. But it was a pretty fun watch, and I'm definitely interested in the next season.
Which I think just started.
Did it?
It's supposed to be said July 27th. I don't know if that actually happened. But I don't know. When it's on VRV, whatever the hell that is.
That's the one I just watched this
September
one on.
September 15th.
Did they move it? Oh, September 15th. Okay.
September 15th?
September 15th.
Okay.
On whatever VRV Select is. I assume that's Select. Like a PlayStation Portable that you can watch that on or like a Lynx.
Sure. Yeah. I was just on the website.
Oh, okay.
So it's on there. It's easy enough.
Somehow VRV Select makes me imagine like that this is only on Game Boy Select or something. Like there's like one handheld variant by Sega that you can buy that watch this show on.
You can watch Powers and this on the PlayStation Network.
You have to buy a dedicated device that just plays this.
Great. All right. Well, let's move over to Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Episode 5, Season 7. How do we come back from that epic dragon fight last episode? Spoiler alert, everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first you start by revealing that cliffhanger was bullshit, as we all knew it was.
Okay, let's start with that beginning, because what the fuck?
Sorry. But Jamie was wearing heavy armor that was causing him to sink fast to the bottom.
Yeah.
And then the next scene in this new episode, we're presented with somehow Braun, he must have had some Jedi swimming, like breathe underwater device, because they swam all the way over to the other side of this huge fucking lake and like pop out like undetected. What?
See, Grant, this is how I know you haven't read the books, because Braun's a merman. He's in the water, he develops a tail.
Okay.
That's did you not read the chapter that he released online? That's what they reveal in book 12, whatever book it is. That's what's revealed, is that Braun is a merman. It's a key plot development that Braun becomes a merman in the water, and that he can also magically remove armor.
I gotta say, this episode, maybe a little bit of the last episode, this season is really straining for me. The differences between a bit more of a plausible world building that was going on with George R. R. Martin and an expedited fan service version that Benioff and Weiss are delivering to us.
Yeah.
And parts of that are a little bit sad to me.
Really? I am 100% on board the fan service version. I love every episode of this. And I don't need 100 pages of how the fuck Jamie got out of the water, okay? I need 5 seconds of him being pulled out of the water. I don't need 20 minutes of how Varys gets across the continent. I just want to know that he got there.
I am necessarily
okay with fast travel. I am okay with Deus Ex Machina. I'm totally okay with it.
I just
doesn't bother me.
Every character is crossing paths with every other character to a ridiculous degree.
I love it.
What is the deal with, what's his name, Jorah Mormont popping back up with completely, not even with his grayscale, but scarless. He looks absolutely fine after everything was cut off of him. His skin is just like got a rosy glow, no makeup department or nothing. I'm like, okay, what the fuck? But then, of course, he pops up and runs into Jon Snow and like they're just kind of kicking the shit. I'm like, oh, hey, do you guys both happen to know Sam Tarly and you both happen to be at Dragon's? Well, there's so many interconnected things going on that just are nutty.
I love it. And here's the thing. We don't know how much time is passing. We have no idea how long it's taken them to travel between these places. It doesn't bother me at all. It only occurs to me when people say it after the fact. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is kind of weird. Never in the moment does it bother me.
Oh,
never in the moment does it bother me.
Oh, hey, Danny. Yeah, I ran into this guy, Samwell Tarly, who healed me of the grayscale. Oh, that's interesting, because I just happened to meet his other two brothers all the way over there the same day and burned them to death.
But that's what you're thinking about, because in amidst the question of...
Yeah, because the Tarlys are...
In amongst the question of the logistics of it, we had this badass scene where Daenerys burns these two motherfuckers alive, and we had this great scene between Dany and Jorah Mormont that was so filled with emotion and payoff, man. I am so plugged into this that I don't give a shit about these logistical things. I don't know how you're so pulled out of the show.
It's not a huge problem, because I'm still really enjoying this show, but it just seems untrue to what George R. R. Martin set up in his really grounded, I thought, exploration of this fantasy world where travel takes time, where people don't cross paths and see each other this often. But now everyone is just hanging out in the same living room, kicking it. And
I think the books have a huge amount of problems, notably being kind of slow and sloggy and spending hundreds of pages on characters I don't give a shit about. And none of that's evident in the TV show. It's a leaner, more interesting version of it. I am 100% on board with the Benioff and Weiss version, and don't ever need to read the books again.
I am 86% on board.
But to talk about this episode in particular, I thought that there was some really, really cool stuff. I thought that my favorite thing is that they spent 7 seasons of the show putting together the D&D party. That made me super happy when I realized that they spent all this time putting together the D&D party.
You must have seen this picture a buddy of ours posted where it's got the backs of all those guys.
Yes.
And it's like level 70 barbarian, level 70 warlord, level 70 mage.
Yep.
And then it's got level 2 warrior for, what's his name?
Gendry. Which, by the way, you asked last week where Gendry was, and there he is.
There he is.
I did not expect to see him. When they went back to Flea Bottom, I was like, no, it can't be. And then when they show him walk into a blacksmith shop, I'm like, they're bringing Gendry back.
And then I see Gendry, and I'm like, who's that guy who doesn't look like the Gendry we left?
Looks just like Gendry. Like,
where? How did his eyebrows shrink like to half the size, and his hair is like all gone, and it looks really waxy? Hmm. I don't know. Part of it, like, I'm like, is that the same actor?
It's the same actor.
It was, apparently, but he looked so much different.
I don't know. I honestly thought they'd forgotten Gendry.
Yeah.
And so when they brought him back, his Warhammer moment was badass.
It was. I kind of wish, and this is superficial, but while I'm on the bitching roll, why not?
Yep.
I kind of wish that he was a hulking mass of a dude with big old ropey arms, like he should be if he's a blacksmith.
Yeah.
And like he should be if he's the heir to the Baratheon throne.
Yeah, but that's kind of hard to do with the actor unless you like shoot him up full of, I don't know, steroids.
You know, they could have recast. They recast the mountain to be the most massive dude ever.
So I also the issue that I did have was the notion that Tyrion could get in there and talk to Jaime so easily. I thought that was a little bit of a
or that Tyrion would ever do that. Like, yeah. That's also a thing where Tyrion would go, there's got to be a more clever way for me to do this. Yeah. I don't know. There seemed to be like a dumbing down of Tyrion this past season.
Yeah,
too.
That's true. However, I did like that Bronn was the one who put them together because Bronn is the connective tissue between Tyrion and Jaime.
Yeah.
And anytime Bronn is on the show, I love that Bronn, despite being the guy who shot a dragon last episode, is the guy who's like, no, no, once there's dragons, I'm out.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not fighting. No, fuck you. And by the way, I think I was right. I don't think they had more of those scorpions. It doesn't sound like they've got them. It sounds like they were like, we're going to lose. We don't have – it didn't work.
Okay. Here's another thing I wanted to ask you about. Cersei and touching her belly. Is she actually pregnant?
Okay. I don't think she is.
You think she's manipulating Jaime?
I think she is. Although, if she is pregnant – that baby's never going to arrive because the witch told her she'd have three children.
Right? That was the other thing I was going to say. So, like, the witch prophecy, everything came true.
So
she ain't going to have that.
Either she's not really pregnant or she's not going to live the next 9 months. Either one seems entirely possible.
Okay, okay.
You know, if she dies, she doesn't have that ninth kid. I do love that Gilly discovered one of the biggest secrets in the show, and Sam just kind of walks right over. I mean, there's no reason he would think he's like she's trying to talk about this important. Like, we need to stop the white. It really did feel like she's like, oh, this is interesting. There's this thing about this Prince Rhaegar, and he's like, yes, that's nice, dear. I'm trying to solve the White Walker crisis.
I feel like he was trying to bitch about some other things, and she's all like, I know how to read.
I thought it was deliberately set up for humor. I thought it was hilarious that she basically dropped one of the biggest info bombs of the whole show, and every fan got it, but there's no reason Sam should know why it's important that she's talking about this dude.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny. I just thought that was hilarious.
It was nothing that we didn't already know, but it's funny that it's documented. There's another like proof there.
We didn't have it confirmed. It was still fan theory. We didn't know that he had been married.
That's a
big change. That means that he's not a bastard, that he's legit claim to the throne.
Oh, shit.
So that's a pretty notable thing.
And then right after that, we get the scene where Drogon lands, apparently fine after an arrow went through him.
I think dragons heal pretty fast.
I guess. And just like lands right there and starts walking up to Jon Snow menacingly.
Yeah.
And Danny just sits on the back of the dragon like, oh, this is peculiar, but I'm just going to let it play out.
Let's see how this plays out.
And it's like, the fuck, Danny? He's like, it's still a dragon. Maybe pull back. You don't want to kill Jon Snow.
I think Danny's like, nah, he's not going to hurt him.
I guess. That's quite a...
I mean, that was a little clunky. I'll grant you that. But they should have
had a scene where she's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then like somehow Jon Snow's able to interact. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. They had to have that sign in the scene there somewhere. And this was like a 43-minute episode. Like, they got a lot of stuff into a short episode.
Oh, was it?
It was short. It might have been 53, but it was not an hour. It was a shorter episode. Next week's is like an hour and 10. And directed by Alan Taylor, by the way, so that's going to be fucking fantastic.
Oh, shit.
Written by Benioff and Weiss.
He did the Battle of the Bastards. He
did the Battle of the Bastards. He's done a Hard lot Home. Of the great.
Okay. Second Thor movie.
Second Thor movie as well.
mixed feelings then.
I loved the putting everybody together. I like that the Hound and the Brotherhood have now joined up with the rest of them.
I missed the whole I guess like he looked in the fire, but all of a sudden they're there. I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sort of. But once again, my issue with like, oh, of course everyone's just coming together.
See, I love that this is the coming together season. That's my favorite thing is seeing all the stars. This is the payoff to six seasons of setup.
It just doesn't feel organic. No. I'm okay with it because I like seeing them together too.
Yeah.
But it just feels ham-fisted by the writers. And that part, it just makes me kind of irks
me. The day after, everybody's saying stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But I'm never in the moment thinking about it.
Yeah.
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 But I thought this was a fantastic episode. And I am super excited for next week because next week some shit's going down. It's penultimate episode of the season. It's Alan Taylor. It's Benioff and Weiss. It's people gonna die.
Yeah, it's a penultimate.
People gonna die next week.
So, okay. We have seven guys walked out into the snow.
Yep.
Who's dying?
Gendry's not going to make it. I'm predicting it now.
Gendry? I wouldn't be surprised if Gendry does make it, but...
Jorah's a dead man.
Jorah might as well. That was a huge goodbye.
Jorah might as well have said, I'm getting too old for this shit. I've got three more days till retirement. When I come back, we will profess our love to each other. Like that was ha, I'm going off to die now.
Once again, I survived for, I guess, I don't know why.
Yeah. he's like, I survived certain death. Now I must be invincible. I mean, really, it could have been any of those things because that dude's a dead man.
I imagine Beric Dondarrion's going down. As well as the red whatever. Okay, did you see the preview for next week?
Yes.
There's a scene where homeboy with the eye patch. Yep. Is that Dondarrion?
That's Bondric. Dondarrion, yes.
Okay, I don't remember which one was like the knight and which one was the priest, the names-wise.
Yeah.
But there's a scene where he pulls back his sword and it lights on fire. And it was such a fucking awesome framed scene.
Yep.
So badass. I'm excited for it.
So my guess is that all those free folk with Tormund are going to die. Jorah's going to die. The two Brotherhood guys are going to die, which is going to be, you know, one of the Brotherhood guys wants to die. The guy who keeps coming back.
Oh, yeah.
He just kind of wants that, and he's finally going to get it. I think Gendry, Jon, and Tormund are going to survive.
The Hound survives.
And the Hound has to survive because the Hound has to be killed by Arya.
No, the Hound has to first face off against the Mountain.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has to kill his brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I could also see them pulling a surprise where like where Gendry dies or where Tormund dies because they've set up the Tormund Brienne thing, and if they undercut that, that'd be very Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I feel like the Gendry element, like in the books, it seemed really important, this idea of the legitimacy that Gendry had to the throne as an actual born of Baratheon.
Yeah.
And the idea that he's still walking around this bastard with a degree of I can totally see this idea that he goes out there, he's a liability, but someone else dies and he somehow makes it back, like running scared or running way outmatched, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
I don't know. I love the scene with Jon and Gendry where Gendry basically just tells him – he ignores all of the Onion Knight's warnings and it just tells him, yeah, I'm a bastard just like you. These two are the next incarnation of Ned Stark and Robert Baratheon, and it makes sense for them to have this sort of bond. And I thought that was earned even though it was kind of a quick thing. I really liked it. So.
Yeah. So I'm finding myself more and more invested in the ending of this show and less invested in the show. Like, being that I'm like four episodes into season one, I'm becoming more and more invested in how this ends.
Because of us talking?
Yeah, just because of hearing so much about it. Not just in here, but like literally the whole world is talking,
about Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And has been for a while now. And I don't know any of the characters really. But based on the little bit I've seen of the show, I desperately want it to end with everyone dying so that the lesson of the show is that chasing this throne with all these families that they scorched earth, fuck everyone over, no one wins, and it's just a bunch of corpses and White Walkers just take it all over.
Like, and then
that would be
workplace comedy.
That would be the greatest ending to me. Like if Game of Thrones just ends with literally everyone, Jon Snow, everybody dead.
Okay, it ends. And then cue the song from The Office.
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun,
and then it's Janice the White Walker. It's Cousin Oliver the White Walker.
Oh, I just want to see him cut to like the close-ups of the White Walkers, given that like awkward look, like
the gym face.
Yeah, the gym face.
The Night King could do a gym face. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
so perfect. All right, guys. This is a fun one. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this. Thank you, audience. Thank you, Les. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
We're going to cut things off there. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.